Welcome, everybody, to the Between the Ropes podcast. I'm Brian Fritz. Appreciate everybody for listening, for downloading, for subscribing to the podcast. If you're not doing it already, please do it. Rate and review the podcast as well. It's going to be a little bit of a different Between the Ropes podcast this week, simply because Michael Wiseman is not here. And the reason he's not here is just because his schedule got in the way. Like I've said plenty of times, we actually have real jobs outside of doing the podcast, which is unfortunate. And the real unfortunate part is, you know, jobs got in the way of us doing the podcast together this week. My schedule changed, his schedule changed, and I didn't want to leave everybody hanging. And I figured, you know what? Me by myself is better than nothing. I think it's a little bit weird for myself simply because I'm so used to doing the podcast with a guest or a co-host or whatever you want to call it, but I'm going to have to do it solo this week, which I guess is better than nothing. I hope is better than nothing. I hope you at least enjoy the podcast still, even if it is just me. So we'll get things back on track next week. I am going to talk about what happened this week when it came to WWE with Money in the Bank and TV and where they're going right now. It's probably going to be a little bit of an abbreviated podcast from what we normally do. I don't expect to be going an hour, hour and a half, anything like that. But I do want to talk about what happened in WWE this past week. And obviously Ring of Honor has a big pay-per-view that is coming up at the end of the week as well. But first, I do want to include my conversation with Austin Aries. So, you know, Austin has been doing a great job, I think, since joining WWE, making the best out of 205 Live like everybody else is trying to do right now. And it's something that I know that him and a lot of the other guys in the cruiserweight division and on 205 Live have said, hey, you know what? It's an ongoing process when it comes to that show. And we'll see exactly where it goes. You got to give everybody time, though, because 205 Live is still somewhat new and we're all trying to figure it out from the company down to the talent. So say what you will about that. Some of that's company line and I totally get it. Some of that I'm sure that they totally believe in and those guys are working very hard. But Austin is a very passionate guy when it comes to his beliefs, not only when it comes to wrestling, but also society, and also when it comes to his diet. So it's not a secret that Austin is a vegan, and he has a new book out talking about his change in his diet to where he is now a vegan, to even his rise in wrestling, and just kind of the way that he looks at life in total. Now, so he has his new book out. It's called Food Fight, My Plant-Powered Journey from the Bingo Halls to the Big Time. A lot of it is about his diet and the way that he has changed over the years to where he cut out meat, to where now he's totally vegan. But he does talk about a lot of other things in the book when it comes to, you know, his start wrestling to climbing through the independents and going through Ring of Honor and TNA to where he is now in WWE. So he talks about all that in the book, but the main point of it is kind of looking at society in a different way and the way that he looks at what he wants to put into his body and when it comes to his diet. So I recently spoke with Austin. We talked about the book a lot. So let me air that right here. Here is my conversation with Austin Aries. You can add author to the resume of Austin Aries. His book, Food Fight, My Plant-Powered Journey from the Bingo Halls to the Big Time, is available now, and he joins me here for a few minutes. So you're a guy that is originally from cheese and meat-eating country in Wisconsin, and you became vegan, what, 6 years ago?
Yeah, I stopped eating meat 17 years ago, and then finally kicked the dairy and the eggs about 6 years ago now. So it was, you know, slow transition, but I don't think I'll be looking back.
So what did the people back in Wisconsin think once they found out that you were no longer eating meat?
I think at first, when it first started, you know, again, back in 2000, anything else, people, you know, will meet with some skepticism and figure it's a fad, or, you know, we'll see how long you can do without that. Then over time, as I kind of stuck with it, it kind of changed more into intrigue and really kind of feel being inquisitive of like, well, how do you do it? Like, what do you eat? You know, like, so then it became more questions. And, you know, it's really cool is, you know, I really never tried to push my beliefs on anybody, but I'm more than happy to talk about why I've chosen the things I have or the things that I've found out or research I've done that have made me make the decisions I do. So over the course of time, you know, a lot of my relatives, my siblings, brothers and sisters, some of my close friends, you know, even my beautiful girlfriend, have all converted, to some degree, to a healthier lifestyle, eating and more plant-based in their diets, which is kind of cool.
So I think one of the things that's interesting about the book is that obviously it talks about your transformation to becoming vegetarian and now vegan, but it's also about a lot of other things. I love this write-up in talking about the book. It says, it's about a decision every person has to make. Will you blindly color inside the lines that society has drawn for you, or will you question the system, think for yourself, and have the bravery to make your own rules? I mean, that's deep right there, man.
Well, thanks. I really think that that's the driving force behind my journey, right? You know,
yeah.
I grew up in kind of every town in USA in the Midwest where a lot of people do, and they kind of have this blueprint mapped out for you for how you're supposed to live your life, and you see it all around you. So if you think outside that box or you question if that's the only way to have a happy ending, so to speak, you'll get various different kind of pushback or roadblocks put in your way. Or the contrary, you have people like, you know, my family, you know, my mom, who just kind of supported me in whatever I wanted to do, you know, as long as I was happy. So I think that's what it's really about, is just, you know, find your own happiness and question things put in front of you. For me, when I started, you know, when some seeds were planted, when it came to food, because again, always kind of outside the box, anti-establishment, you know, type of mindset. And when I started peeling back some layers on food and started seeing the realities of what's put in front of us, it was pretty eye-opening. So I kept digging more, and once I kind of pulled my head out of the sand and connected dots, I couldn't go back and pretend I didn't know just how bad these options were that we were, you know, being basically programmed to make and eat.
Was there a tipping point when you said, I need to make this decision, I need to change my lifestyle when it comes to eating, and that's what made you become vegetarian and eventually vegan?
I wouldn't say a tipping point. I think the book chronicles like a bunch of little seeds that were planted, you know, throughout my lifetime, whether it was when I was really young at my grandparents' farm or later in life with some new people I had met that had some different mindsets and looked at life a little differently than maybe the people I had grown up around. And all these little seeds kind of sprouted at different times and ultimately kind of, you know, culminated when I made the decision to stop eating meat. And then, you know, later on, as I kept doing more research and then, you know, saw the documentary Folks Over Knives, which to me, after watching that, was a compelling enough argument and made enough sense for me to drop dairy from and eggs completely from my diet at that point. And really, that was an overnight thing. Once I saw that documentary, I just kind of made the decision to cut out the whey protein and the cheese and the eggs. And so it wasn't too hard of a transition, just because it had been so long from, you know, 2000 of cutting out the meat all the way to 2000 and, you know, 11, 12 to cut out the rest of the animal products.
When you started this journey, when it came to the change of your diet, how difficult was it at first, or was it difficult for you when you first started?
I always tell people, like, the difficult part is having the conviction that it's important enough for you to stick with it, you know? And I think that's with anything in life, right? Like, once you decide something's important to you or you give it value, you put it on your priority list, then I think it's not as difficult because you're motivated to make it easier. So for me, I think once I kind of jumped in, the difficult part was really just the learning, okay? It's like, and that's why I tell everybody, they say, oh, I want to just try going vegan for a week. And like, that's impossible, because you have to always have the tools and the knowledge to be successful. So I think initially it was just, there's so much out there and there's so much information. So getting the knowledge and the tools to be successful. But again, that's why it was a long journey for me. But, you know, there's a lot of crutches you can use initially, those first steps. There's a lot of processed, you know, fake meat products out there. And at the time when I first started, Morningstar Farms was the big one that was in the stores everywhere. So that was my initial crutch, just the things that I used to eat that were hot dogs or hamburgers or now veggie dogs or veggie burgers. And so that was my initial like step into it, which made it kind of easy. Over time, I started realizing, as I looked at the ingredients list of that, and it's a Kellogg's product, so it's a big corporate product, and I'm looking at the ingredients list, which takes up almost one whole, like, you know, panel of the box, And I realized, well, wow, this stuff's probably not any better for me than what I was trying to avoid before. You know, it's just, it's bashing me in a whole different way. So then that knowledge led me to make a better decision. Go, all right, well, there's got to be other products that aren't as bad for me. And that's with everything, right? And that doesn't have to do with plant-based or animal-based, but that's everything. Like, there's always a better option out there, whether it's your bread, your cereals, your fruits. So I just started seeking out the better options once I learned that I had them.
Yeah, and I think the whole thing is a process. Like anything else, when you change, because you talk about the steps that you had in the early years, I would almost equate it to like somebody that was trying to stop smoking. And it's very tough to do cold turkey, but maybe you use the patch, you know, for a month or two or whatever, and you just kind of wean yourself off. And I assume it's probably a similar thing for when you made this, you know, change in your diet.
I think for most people, that's a lot more successful approach. I mean, for me, I personally, like, I made a decision and I kind of cut meat out overnight, but it had been something I've been teetering on for a while, right? And finally, I got to a point where I said, you know what, like, this is gross and I've had enough. But also, and then that, like you said, that journey to then going completely plant-based, you know, it was a process where I guess you could say I weaned myself off. But again, I think for most people, you're going to be a lot more successful if you say, I'm going to take one day a week and try to do a meatless Monday like a lot of people do, or pick, you know, a meal a day. My lunches I'm going to try to do without any animal products, and do it that way and build from there, then try to go all in without the knowledge or the tools, you're going to fail. So, and to the point too, is people always say, like, you live in this one extreme where you never eat plant products or animal products. You only eat plant-based food. And then I always point out, like, we kind of live in the other extreme, or raised in the other extreme, where we're always eating animal products almost every meal. You know, I always ask people to think of the last meal that they had without eating meat, dairy, or eggs. And most people kind of just have a puzzled look on their face. So, you know, it's about just maybe starting to implement that a little bit, you know, and then build from there.
So when you have made this change, and obviously this has been going on now, like you said, for almost two decades overall, how much is this changed what it's meant to you when it comes to your career in the ring?
Well, you know, in some ways, I think some of the strong convictions I have, and maybe part of the reason the book came out, was really partly due because of the wrestling, right? We travel all over the country, and we travel to all sorts of towns, big and small, with all sorts of fans and all sorts of tax brackets. And all sorts of backgrounds. But the one thing I've noticed from shaking hands and signing autographs is just the amount of, like, unhealthy people that I come in contact with, and kids, you know, and kids that are already kind of off to a bad start in life because it's just bad nutritional choices. And maybe not the fault of theirs or their parents. It's simply a lack of knowledge, not really understanding how good and bad some of this stuff is, and that you really do have a choice if you're willing to, you know, to inform yourself and make it important. So that, I think, in some weird way, like, you know, there's been a connection between being on the road and doing what I do and having a small influence to maybe that 8 or 10 year old who, when he learns that Austin is vegan, he doesn't even know what that is, but he starts looking it up and maybe plants a seed for him that sprouts later in life, kind of like I had seeds planted for me, you know?
I know I'm not the best example of this, but I've gotten better over the years. But how difficult is for you, or when it comes to, you're leading a very healthy diet, you're hoping that other people will follow suit because of all the different things that you can put in your body and how bad it is. But we're in a society more so than ever before where you can't drive, it seems like, 100 yards without seeing a fast food place.
Well, and that's what I talk about in the book, really. I mean, and the one thing I realized is, wow, the easiest, most convenient, most quote-unquote cost-effective foods we have are the worst for us. So it makes it harder to have to, you know, you shop around the perimeter of the store, or not any of the aisles, you know, or like you said, there's fast food everywhere. But to go, you know, seek a healthy type of Whole Foods place or you know, a more health-conscious cafe, like, not obviously not balanced to equal. We just haven't placed an importance on it in this society. You know, we don't do it from our educational system early on. We don't do it in our healthcare system. Our doctors, it's not part of their curriculum to be educated in this. You know, I was just speaking with one of the WWE doctors about this the other day, you know, and just asked them, like, hey, how much time do you remember spending on nutrition in your 4 years of school? And it just, it's not there. Because that goes against giving somebody a pill and telling them they're going to be all better, or, hey, we'll see you in 6 weeks. You know, healthy people are bad customers, and we have a healthcare system that's for profit. You know, and we have a corporate food system that's for profit. Corporations don't have to have souls. They don't have to look out for the better interests of their consumers. They just have to look out for the better interests of their shareholders.
Well, like you said, you know, I think one
that's the underlying problem.
Right. Well, like you said, you know, I think one of the major problems, too, is that just the expense when it comes to eating clean. And I'm not using that as an excuse, but you have all these cheaper options that are available for you. And it seems like everybody should eat healthier. You want to do that. You want to put better things in your body. But that comes at a cost right now. And I'm wondering how that can possibly change over time. And if have you seen any changes in that where it's become more affordable?
Well, Brian, I think my counter to this, and again, I talk about this in the book, and I don't want to give too much away, but two thought processes. One, I don't think it's expensive to eat healthy. It's expensive to eat conveniently.
Mm-hmm.
And it's probably really, really expensive to eat healthy and conveniently, right? Because those two things don't necessarily go hand in hand. You know, if you want a bag of brown rice, if you want to make it at your house and put it in your fridge, isn't very expensive. It costs you a buck or two, and that gives you a lot of meals. Same with a dry bag of black beans or lentils. You know, these are staples of my diet, and they're not terribly expensive. Now, if I want to buy a can of beans and I just want to, you know, use the can opener and have it already prepared, that's going to be three times as expensive than if I buy just the dried bag of beans. So there's an expense to convenience. We live in a society that's based around fast food, you know, fast media. Everything's the microwave. Everything is, you know, we want it right now. And that comes at a price, and it's not, the price isn't financially, the price is our health, right? So, and then that goes to point two, which is, you know, when we go to buy a car, or we go to buy a house, or we buy shoes or anything we go to buy, we don't say, well, what's the cheapest, easiest thing I can get? Not necessarily, right? Yeah. We want something with value. So I talk about looking at food like this. I want something that tastes good. I want something that's quick, and I want something that's cheap. And for a lot of people, just like the way I grew up, those are the criteria that were used to base what I was going to eat, you know? And some along the way, when I switched philosophy to, is it good for me? How much value, nutritional value, am I getting from my dollar? And where did it come from? Then you start looking at food in a whole different light. You start judging it completely differently.
Well, how
about... It doesn't taste good still in there. Don't get me wrong, because nobody likes to eat food that doesn't taste good, right?
Right.
But it's not the prevalent factor. It's not, you know, how quick is it isn't the prevalent factor. How cheap is it isn't the prevalent factor. You know, So
what's it like being on the road and then trying to, you know, keep up this healthy lifestyle when it comes to eating?
You know what? Honestly, it's not easy. It's not easy for any of the guys and the girls that have this type of travel schedule. And I think you do some traveling, you know, anyone who does any kind of traveling for their job, it always can create a bit of an issue. Cause as you said earlier, the easiest stuff that's available to you late at night or when you're on the road, isn't necessarily the best stuff that you put in your body. So, you know, what I see a lot of in the locker rooms, and this comes with whatever kind of diet the superstars are trying to stay on, is they're prepared to have prepacked meals. They have coolers that they travel with on the road to keep their meals with them so they can eat on their schedule. But that comes with the job, just being prepared. It's part of being prepared and part of what goes on with, you know, keeping your body where you want it to be with this type of lifestyle. So, you know, for me, just like I said, instead of having like, you know, tuna packets or things like that, a whey protein powder, I'll have, you know, packets of lentils or you know, plant-based protein powders and protein bars for in a pinch. And then usually when I get into town somewhere, I try to find a good little spot, whether it's a cafe or a Whole Foods type of grocery store that I can kind of stock up on what I need for the trip.
So how many people, if anybody in the locker room has approached you and said, hey, give me some more insight about what I could be doing better?
Not necessarily like what, you know, give them advice, but more just a general, like I said, just kind of general questions or, you know, surprisingly, I think there's a lot more openness to it, and you're seeing people, you know, not looking at it so foreign as they used to, right? And there's a lot more options. You know, the catering is usually pretty good at having some options for different dietary restrictions. I've had production people come up. I've had, you know, different cameramen come up. One gentleman was talking about his daughter because he was saying, yeah, she wants to go vegan. He didn't know much about it, so he's asking me about it so we could try to understand where she was coming from, you know? And it's cool, you know, it's food is such an important part of who we are, right? It's something we do every day, multiple times a day. It's one of the most important building blocks of everything we have. So, I certainly enjoy talking about it and getting other people's opinions and learning new stuff and sharing the things I've learned.
A couple quick things when it comes to you now, being in WWE, you finally had the opportunity to be a part of WrestleMania. Fantastic match that you had with Neville. What was it like finally being able to go out there on that big stage? It's, I'm sure, something you've been wanting to do your entire career.
Yeah, you know, like I said, getting to be the first superstar to walk out there that night in front of an amped-up crowd was a really special moment. Definitely was fueled up with a couple of bananas. Had an extra banana or two before I went out there to make sure my potassium, my energy levels were at their peak. And yeah, it was just really special and hopefully something I get to relive, over the next 2 years.
How great is that gimmick that you get to walk around with a banana in your pocket?
I mean, I don't know if it's a gimmick or whatever. It's just, they can come in handy from time to time, you know?
Sure. I'm waiting for somebody else to start, you know, picking out some other fruit. Who knows what everybody can grab in? Passing on the healthy lifestyle in there. Last thing, because
that's what I'm saying. I mean, you got the New Day, and they're pushing, you know, sugary cereal on the kids, right? And I'm trying to tell the kids to have a banana. You know, I mean, I'm just trying to be a good role model.
I mean, they're just pouring that stuff.
I make them all say please and thank you for cameras, you know, for pictures and autographs. I always make the kids say please and thank you. Especially, I make the parents say please.
Yep.
You know, just trying to spread some manners, trying to spread some healthy eating. Nothing wrong with that. I know in today's society, that probably makes you a bad guy, but whatever.
I don't think there's anything wrong with being respectful to everybody. I mean, it's funny you say that. Like, okay, when saying please and trying to get somebody to eat healthy, that makes you a bad guy.
Yeah, well, so it's funny. You know, I was at one of the live events here in the last week, and I had one of my NXT shirts, wore that out to the ring, and you know, those in the ring, you know, people yelling at me to get my attention. And there was one girl who yelled, got my attention. And I looked at her and she simply just said, hey, you know, like she was just rooting me on, you know, she gave me a little thumbs up and like, you know, get Neville. And like just about every other kid who got my attention was like, throw me your shirt. Hey, give me your shirt. So when it came time to throw my shirt out and, you know, I took it off, of course, all the hands went up and it didn't matter if they were 8 years old or they were 38 years old. They were trying to push to get the shirt. And I found the girl who wasn't interested in the shirt and just wanted to root me on. And I threw it to her and her dad ended up tweeting about it. And I thought like, well, that's like a good example of, you know, you kind of approach things the right way. Sometimes you get the reward.
I want people to start chanting, please beat up Neville, not just beat up Neville, please beat him up.
Well, yeah, that might be asking a little too much. That's a lot of syllables for them to try to spit out.
Probably.
Especially synchronized, you know?
Well, everybody can go get the book, Food Fight, My Plant-Powered Journey from the Bingo Halls to the Big Time. You can go online to AustinAriesBook.com to get more information, and you can also order it by going to shopbenchmark.com/AustinAries. Always appreciate the time, and continued success in WWE.
Thanks, Brian. It was great talking to you.
Thanks again to Austin Aries for joining me. Once again, you can go to AustinAriesBook.com to find out more information about the book. You can order it there. Also, check out the article or the post, whatever you want to call it, that I did regarding that interview on Sporting News. You can check that out. Just follow me on Twitter. It's @BrianFritz, and you will find the link to it there. While you're online, quick reminder, today's podcast brought to you by Audible. You can get a free audiobook download and a 30-day free trial. Just go to audibletrial.com/between the ropes. You'll be helping me out. I'm going to tell you right now, when you sign up, that does help me out. Guess what? I earn a commission, but it's going to help you out as well, because it's an awesome deal to go over to Audible and get a book that you can listen to. And there's a lot of different wrestling books that you can get right now. Daniel Bryan's book is there. Chris Jericho is one of his autobiographies. Bob Holly's book is there. The Death of WCW is there as well. Justin Roberts' book is there now as well. So go to audibletrial.com/between the ropes. You've got over 180,000 titles to choose from that you can use on your iPhone, your Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. Like I said, you get a 30-day free trial. If you want to cancel after the 30-day trial, go for it. But you get a free audiobook download that is yours to keep for as long as you want. So it's an awesome deal that Audible is offering up right now. By the way, AJ Lee's book is there as well. So there's a lot of great choices when it comes to wrestling. And there's so many different books as well that are not wrestling. Because believe it or not, there are other things in life than wrestling. I guess I'm finding this out. I think everybody else should too, probably. Maybe we all live in a bubble. I don't know. If you only want to listen to wrestling books, cool, go for it. audibletrial.com/between the ropes. Sign up right now. If you want to listen to some other books as well, they've got some great selections, over 180,000 titles. So go right now, get your free audiobook download and a 30-day free trial. Do it by going to audibletrial.com/between the ropes. All right, let's get into what happened this past week in WWE, going back to Money in the Bank from Sunday night. And I had big expectations going into that show. I thought it was going to be one of those where they don't have a lot of matches set, but that means they're going to give the matches that they do have a lot more time. There's going to be some really good action in the ring. And for the most part, I think there was good action. The biggest complaint that everybody had about that show was the booking, the finishes. And that's one of the big problems right now when it comes to WWE. The main one was the women's Money in the Bank ladder match, in that it's the first ever ladder match. It's the first ever Money in the Bank match for these women. And, you know, they're building it up as well as they should. There was a awesome video package that WWE did that they aired a couple of times during the pre-show and even when the card started. And instead of letting the women just go out there and bust their humps and let this be like this fantastic match that stood on its own and somebody won that briefcase, you know, they interjected James Ellsworth in it. And Ellsworth was the one that climbed the ladder, grabbed the briefcase, and he threw it down to Carmella, and she won. And in the aftermath of all this on SmackDown, Daniel Bryan took the case away and said, we're going to do a rematch on SmackDown next week, on next Tuesday. We're going to do the Money in the Bank ladder match again. I am like a lot of other people in that I am befuddled in why they would do that finish. You're building it up so much when it comes to the women and what a great opportunity this is for them. And it is. And they should be in that position. They should be having Money in the Bank ladder matches. I don't understand that finish other than they just wanted to build towards a rematch. And it's all about TV right now. It's all about what big matches can we put on TV right now? Oh, what can we do on SmackDown that's a big match? I know what it is. Let's do Money in the Bank ladder match. And they do it in spite of what they're doing on pay-per-view. I know that those shows are now on the WWE Network and they don't mean as much, but they should mean something. And it's really stripping, you know, the specialty of those shows away when they're being booked like any other TV. And there's a lot of people that have issues with the way that they're booking TV right now. I think they can be doing so much better because they have the talent. It's just utilizing that talent in a better way. And I just don't agree with a lot of what they're doing right now. I don't think it's the most horrible thing I've ever seen in my life. I mean, this is not dying days of WCW or anything like that, but you can't blame it on a lack of effort from talent. You can't blame it on egos. You can't blame it on we don't have enough talent here. It's just about putting them in the best position to thrive. Look at that main event that they did. I mean, that was a good main event in the men's Money in the Bank ladder match. That was a good, good match. It was a really good match. And Baron Corbin won. I don't think that's really a surprise. I thought Kevin Owens was going to win it, but they went with Baron Corbin. That doesn't surprise me. And I think it's always better when a heel wins the Money in the Bank ladder match. So at the beginning of the year, I think we all thought that Baron Corbin was going to win Money in the Bank. You know, I obviously, like I said, I didn't predict it right here. But at the beginning of the year, that was one of the conversations when you talk about the year and what could we see in 2017. And one of those predictions from a lot of people was that Baron Corbin would win Money in the Bank. and he'd probably cash it in and be the champion by the end of the year. I think I might have even said that, and I went against it. So that made a lot of sense, and that was a really, really good match. The world championship match between Jinder Mahal and Randy Orton, it was fine. It was a carbon copy of the match that they had the previous month, and I want to see exactly what they do with Jinder coming up here. There's going to be another match between Jinder and Randy Orton before I think they move him on to a different program. I don't know what else differently they can do, you know, in a match with Jinder. I wonder if people are going to tire out of him, because it's a formula that's working right now, but I think you just have to change it a little bit. You have to tweak it week to week, add some different layers to it. And right now it's the same thing over and over and over. It's good. But when does that need to change to where fans say, okay, I need more. I need more depth. I need more layers. I need a little bit something more. Jinder cutting promos, I think, has been very good. And he's thrived in that position so far. I think we just need to see a little bit more. And I think that little bit more is going to be when John Cena comes back and they put him in a feud together. I've been saying that I think SummerSlam is going to be John Cena against Jinder Mahal. It makes a lot of sense. I think that's where they're going to go with it. And then I think sooner or later you'll see Corbin cash in Money in the Bank on Cena. So we'll see if I'm right. It's all building up towards SummerSlam. And this is where WWE is in right now, is it's all about the big event. Yes, they want to do as best business as possible, but it's all about the big events. It's all about WrestleMania. It's all about SummerSlam. Those are the two big events that they have each and every year. And it seems like everything else, for the most part, is kind of filler. It's what can we do to try to do good things, but it's all about saving the really good ideas and the really big matches for the really big events. We want to have those to be mega blowout shows that we do that we can just pump all over the place. And we see the way that it affects TV between now and then. We see the way it affects there are other pay-per-views between now and then. They can still do some good stuff. Not everything is going to be bad, but I think it really affects their creative, and that's the emphasis right now. It's all about those two shows each year. Let's make SummerSlam into this extravaganza. WrestleMania, it's our biggest show of the year. We got to keep it as an extravaganza, and rightfully so. They should be. I think the question, though, is are they doing all of that at the sake of some of their other events that they are doing? And there's even some questions about that right now because the ratings are down on TV, and that's a big thing for them, and it should be, but it's all about what can we do every week to try to pop a rating? What can we do? So let's do Samoa Joe against Roman Reigns. Let's do a finish on our pay-per-view that might not be one that fans are happy with, but it leads us to doing another Money in the Bank women's match on television. That's what they're doing right now. The ratings bounce back a little bit this week. I get where they're coming from. I just think there's more creative ways of doing this when it comes to storylines and whatnot. Look at Daniel Bryan. So Daniel did some interviews this past week, and I wish I knew exactly which one this was. I apologize for not crediting it, but you can find it if you do a Google search, because he did a few with like NBC Sports and Fox Sports and Sports Illustrated. But you know, he wasn't thrilled with the way that they booked the women's Money in the Bank match. And, you know, he's talked about, yeah, they should be shaking things up when it comes to the presentation of TV. One of the things that he pointed to was the video package that they did in NXT for Roderick Strong. And you got to find out more about the person. You got some depth there. And I wish they would do a little bit more of that when it comes to guys in the main roster. Michael and I talked about this last week about different things that they could do when it comes to utilizing video packages and I think promos and things of that nature that they could definitely do that I think would help them out a lot. Now, all that being said, there were some really good things that happened on TV this past week. Look at the presentation of Samoa Joe, and he's a guy that won't back down from everybody. He got Roman Reigns' face when Roman called him just Joe, and Joe went right after him. He won the match that they had later on in the show. And yes, there was a distraction finish with the return of Braun Strowman, because Braun is not finished with Roman Reigns yet. So Joe won that match, but it was strong. He won with the coquina clutch. He won with Reigns passing out from the move. So That's really good. The video package that they did of Samoa Joe and Brock Lesnar was great as well. I mean, fantastic work once again. So they're doing a really good job of leading up to this big match between Joe and Lesnar when it comes to Great Balls of Fire. I still can't believe I am saying that for the name of a pay-per-view, but they are. And I'm really looking forward to that match. I think it's going to be something that's really, really cool. When it comes to SmackDown, they had a fantastic match between Shinsuke Nakamura and Dolph Ziggler. I think that's the match we've kind of been waiting for them on TV. And they gave them a little bit more time. And I think we got to see a little bit more of the Shinsuke Nakamura that we want to see in WWE. And they're still giving offense to Dolph, and they should. Dolph is this weird enigma that I still don't think they know what to do with. It's like, Dolph is going to be the guy that we just put out there, and sometimes we're going to make him look a little bit better than other times. He's going to have great matches with guys, and that's his role. That's what he's going to do right now, and there's not going to be anything else they do with Dolph Ziggler. Sometimes they'll make it seem like, yes, he can win the big one. He can go out there, and he could be the world champion again, but in our heart of hearts, we know that's not going to happen. With Shinsuke, I want to see exactly what they do coming up here, because there's a lot of different opponents for him, and they don't want to just hand over a loss. So I don't think he's going to be in the world championship picture anytime soon. But I do think that they could do one of the bigger matches with him at SummerSlam. And I've been advocating for a while now that they do Shinsuke against AJ Styles at SummerSlam. And maybe it's going to happen. They did do the spot in Money in the Bank where those guys were on the opposite sides of the ladder, and they put the ladder aside and they went at it for a few minutes and really got people all jazzed up about the possibility of them having a match together in WWE. I think SummerSlam would be a great spot for it. Maybe they're going to hold it off to WrestleMania next year. I've been saying for a while, I think Shinsuke against John Cena could be happening at WrestleMania next year, but there's a long time between now and then. You know, when it comes to SummerSlam, there's just a lot of questions because they're doing Roman Reigns against Braun Strowman at Great Balls of Fire. And Roman Reigns came out on Raw Monday and he said, hey, I want the winner between Joe and Lesnar. I am the number one contender following that match, and I'm going to get that championship match at SummerSlam. I think we all believe that Lesnar is going to win the match against Joe. But does that mean they could actually do Roman Reigns against Brock Lesnar at SummerSlam? Because the thinking all along is they're going to hold off that match to WrestleMania next year. I still think they're going to hold it off. And I think they will find a way to get to Strowman against Lesnar at SummerSlam. That has seemed like it has been the plan for a while. That has been talked about. So I still think that's the route they're going to go. And I don't know what they would do with Roman at that point on that show. But I'm not really going to be shocked if they change it up and said, nope, we're going with Reigns Lesnar at SummerSlam. We're going to do that right now because they do want to make that into a really big event. They are going to get more bang for their buck, I guess, if they do that match now from the standpoint of what can we get people talking about now when it comes to a big Brock Lesnar match. Would Lesnar and Strowman get more attention or Lesnar and Reigns? Lesnar and Reigns would. Now, are you giving away a lot now? What would you do with WrestleMania next year? Could they still have that match at Mania? Yeah, you still could. People are now wondering, would they do Cena against Lesnar Cena against Reigns at WrestleMania next year? There's a lot of different directions they could go. The one thing you don't want them to do, though, is hotshot book. And I don't know if they do Reigns against Lesnar at SummerSlam. Is that a change from the original plan? Would that be quote unquote hotshot booking because, hey, the ratings are down right now. The buzz is down right now. And we want to make SummerSlam into this huge extravaganza. It might be. It might be at this point. They might be doing it for that. They're going to load up that show. I mean, it's going to be Cena against Jinder Mahal. I would expect. Lesnar's going to be on that show in a big match. AJ's going to be on that show in a big match, especially if they do him and Shinsuke. There's a lot of different things that they could do. It's just, they're going to load up for SummerSlam and it's going to be a 4.5-hour show. I mean, we've got Great Balls of Fire before them. We've got Battleground, which a lot of people forgot that we had another SmackDown pay-per-view before SummerSlam. And we do. and that they're going to do gender against Randy Orton for a third time on that show. I don't know if they're going to do a Punjabi prison match, which a lot of people think could be happening, but maybe they will. You know, we just got to get to that point, you know, and hopefully they have some really good matches between now and then. One of the big things I want to see between now and then is the return of American Alpha to TV, because I'm still convinced they've been on a milk carton. It's like they found them for, you know, a minute or two this past week on SmackDown, or at least when it came to Jason Jordan, because all he did was walk out for a half second and like bump knucks with his tag team partner. And then Chad Gable went out and had a match with Kevin Owens. Can we find more things to do with American Alpha, please? I mean, it shouldn't be this hard, and I don't understand what the deal is, but send them over to SmackDown if you have to, or I mean to Raw if you have to. I mean, just find something for them. I mean, this is getting kind of ridiculous. Find a way to get the women on SmackDown back on track as well. Find a way to use Bayley in a better manner, because right now, you know, she was on Raw, and yes, she did the run-in and everything, but there's more things you can do with her. I will say it time and time again, I love the talent that WWE has. It's just the booking ideas have got to change. And I'm not just going to put that on the writing team. I mean, it all comes down to Vince McMahon. And I'm not going to be one of these guys that say, oh, Vince has lost touch, and Vince is crazy, and he doesn't know anything. He's Vince McMahon. I mean, he ain't. If he has an idea to do something and it works, he should get credit. And there's a lot of opportunities here. It's just, will he go with what is a little bit more popular out there? There needs to be not a huge shift, but there definitely does need to be a shift when it comes to booking philosophy in some degrees, and how to utilize guys and how they're looking at different guys. I'm not a big fan of the 50-50 booking. I mean, these are things that I think are easily correctable. It's not like an overhaul of booking, in my mind at least. There's things that need to change, though. The one thing that I will look at right now, though, that I wonder about is, because we do see the TV ratings struggling a little bit, and because this is so important for WWE, and we've seen this in the past, that when TV ratings are down, it's a return to the big guy. And we're starting to see that a little bit. Now, there's not an abundance of big guys, but look over on Raw. Who are the biggest guys that they're going with right now? It's Braun Strowman, Brock Lesnar, Roman Reigns, to some degree Samoa Joe. I mean, they're booking him, you know, in a very smart manner. Now, Joe is a big guy. He's not the tallest guy, but he is a big guy. Jinder Mahal on SmackDown, Baron Corbin. I'm not saying guys don't deserve the position that they're in, but you can see this now. There's this pattern, you know, when it comes to these guys and who they are looking at, you know, for the main event slots. And it's this return to the bigger guys. So they finally did the breakup between Enzo and Cass. There's another big guy that I think they're going to do something with when it comes to Cass. The presentation of the whole whodunit caper on Raw was a bit perplexing. It made Kurt Angle look like a dope in a lot of ways. I mean, Corey Graves had this video, you know, footage. Why didn't he give it to Kurt earlier in the show? Or why didn't Kurt demand it? Why didn't Kurt see it? Why didn't Kurt show it? And Kurt was so gullible into believing that nobody else did the attack. And before Cass was finally presented with this evidence, and then he turned on his little buddy. I think Cass did a really good job when it came to delivering the promo and turning on Enzo. And Enzo having that little tear just roll down his cheek. That was pretty good. That was pretty good. Though, like I said, the setup to it all was kind of clunky. But this is something we've been thinking was going to happen for a while. It's amazing the success that Cass and Enzo had when they were in NXT, and then they bring them up to the main roster, and there was a lot of flaws that shown. Enzo is an extremely talented guy on the microphone and whatnot, but in the ring, that's where, you know, you find his faults. And WWE, rather than trying to work through that, they just said, you know what, we have plans for Cass, or see potential in Cass, and that's the route we're going to go. I don't know what this means for Enzo. I really thought that they were going to be like the New Age Outlaws. I thought they're going to get a tag team run on the main roster, and they never did that. And WWE kind of frowned on them pretty quickly. Now we'll see exactly what they're going to do with Cass. Enzo, I don't know if he's going to be a manager or what exactly do they do with him. Could they put him on 205 Live? I guess they could. I don't know if I'd really want to go that route. But, you know, they broke him up. They'll probably have one match, a couple matches together, and that'll be that. And, I mean, Cass should win those matches decisively. I mean, I don't see them looking at Enzo as a wrestler going forward. And I don't know what that means for him and his future, considering that they don't have managers. He's incredible, though, on the microphone. And I can't imagine a possibility where they just say, he's not going to be around. We don't have a role for him. There has to be a role for that guy because he is so talented on the microphone. And that's a spot where they are lacking right now. You know, and there's a lot of guys they just don't trust to put on the mic that much. So put him on the mic. Find a role for this guy. And I don't even know, man, would they actually put him over into announcing? I don't think so because he's better as a freestyle guy or what he does. But maybe he gets a tryout. Maybe they should try him out as a color commentator for one of the broadcasts. Maybe. Ring of Honor's got a pay-per-view coming up on Friday night. So it's Best in the World. And the main event, ROH World Championship, Christopher Daniels against the American Nightmare Cody. There's been so much talk about this match from a standpoint that Cody coming up the week after is getting a title shot for the IWGP Heavyweight Championship for the New Japan shows that are going to be in Long Beach. We'll be facing Okada. And could he be the ROH champion going into that match? I'm going to say yes. I don't know exactly how they're going to do that match, like what the finish would be or anything like that, but I think Cody is going to win the ROH championship. And he hasn't signed with ROH, but he hasn't signed with New Japan. There's a good story to be told here. And I think that's the route they're going to go. And you know, the Ring of Honor show looks excellent on Friday night. So you've got that match, Kushida against Marty Scurll for the ROH television championship. That should be an incredible match. Tag team titles. They're doing the Young Bucks against War Machine, which should be a lot of fun. Six-man tag titles. Dalton Castle and the Boys against Bully Ray and the Briscoes. I don't expect the titles to change hands there and Bully Ray and the Briscoes to keep them, but, man, I love me some Dalton Castle, and now you're going to see the Boys in the ring, which you don't see all that often in Ring of Honor with them, so that should be a lot of fun. Silas Young against Jay Lethal. Strap match between Hangman Page and Frankie Kazarian. They're doing the Kingdom against Ultimo Guerrero and El Terrible from CMLL on that show as well. And then they're doing the losing team must disband between the Rebellion and Search and Destroy. We'll see exactly where they go with that one. So it looks like a fun show. I think Cody's going to win. And then it sets up all of these different scenarios of the ROH champion taking on the New Japan IWGP champion coming up in Long Beach. And where exactly do they go there? Could Cody actually win both of those titles? Maybe. I mean, and then you could see what's going to happen with Bullet Club then, because Kenny Omega didn't win the championship, but Bullet Club helped Cody to win the championship there in New Japan. There's a lot of different routes that they can go. I'm going to predict right now that I don't think Cody wins the IWGP championship, but I think he's going to win the Ring of Honor championship. I think it's going to be a lot of fun. It's been amazing to watch Cody so far since leaving WWE. We all know about his wish list sheet and everything that he wanted to do and these opportunities that he's now getting. And, you know, he's made it work. He's done such a tremendous job of going out there and getting an opportunity to work with different guys, having these great matches. And he's living it up right now, as well he should. He's having a lot of fun. There's so many different opportunities that we weren't even sure of, and so many different matches, so many different places that he can work in. And, you know, this is a guy that went and worked for TNA for a little stint. He's obviously working with Ring of Honor. He's working with New Japan. I don't think he's going to sign a contract with anybody anytime soon because he wants to have this freedom of working all over the place, which has to be thrilling for him right now in this point in his career and seeing the different things that he can do. And it's something that he's wanted for a long time. You can understand for some people the hesitation of leaving WWE because it still is the end all be all. Well, I say end all be all, and that's not the right way that I should characterize that. But I mean, It's the biggest company in the world. It's a huge stage for guys. But when you're seeing what is going on with independent wrestling, it allows guys to have this unbelievable kind of freedom that they want. Yes, you can go to WWE, and that is the goal for a lot of people, and rightfully so. But when you're on the independent ranks, there is a freedom, and you know, especially when it comes to creativity, that allows you to have a little bit more fun, especially if you are in WWE and there was things that weren't going your way that you didn't like. There is a security blanket to some extent there, but when you go on the independents, it's kind of this what if, what could I do? What else is out there? I want to go out there. I want to have fun and I want to have good matches. I want to do what I got into wrestling for the first place. And that was to go out there and have entertaining matches, you know, and really have these incredible, you know, back and forth with guys. And we talk about the amount of talent at WWE. Look at the talent that's out there in the independent ranks and all the different guys that you can work with. And we're seeing that right now. And Cody is the guy front and center that's taking advantage of that. And now he's got this big opportunity coming up on Friday with the Ring of Honor show, be able to show that, hey, I am a main event guy and I can be the ROH champion. And then he's going to get this massive stage the following week as well when it comes to the Long Beach show and facing Okada. By the way, that show is going to air live on Access TV. And it's also going to be on New Japan World. If anybody subscribes to that, it's about $8 here in the United States if you get it. And then the that will be for the Saturday show. And then the Sunday show will be on New Japan World. And then we'll air the following Friday on Access TV. So it's a great opportunity that if you want to watch some New Japan wrestling, if you are just kind of on the brink of getting into it right now or you haven't watched it yet and you're interested, hey, this could be a great chance to get into it. And I believe Access is even doing a special to where there's going to be maybe more markets being able to get access next weekend. So I heard that someplace, and maybe I should corroborate that first, but I heard that someplace. I think that's exactly what's going to happen. So there's going to be more opportunities to get access. Like I said, you can get New Japan World for about $8 here in the United States. So you can enjoy that. And, you know, and catch up on some New Japan, see what they do with the shows. And if you like it, keep your subscription. It's $8 is pretty cheap, you know, for New Japan to get the video library that they have and all the other good stuff that they present. Plus, you get to watch these shows from Long Beach as well. I'll be at those shows in Long Beach. I'm hoping to have some extra coverage. So be on the lookout for that. Maybe some video interviews or an extra podcast or two with, I don't know if I'll be able to get any wrestlers. Hopefully I can, but even if I can't, I'm sure there's going to be some other people out there that I can talk to that are media honks like myself. And we can talk about the New Japan shows, and all that good stuff there. So appreciate everybody for listening. Like I said, this is going to be a little bit shorter because I didn't have Michael here, and I hope you didn't mind me just, winging it alone and, just going off on tangents and going all over the place and whatnot. You know, there really wasn't too much going on this week when it came to WWE. I mean, I think a lot of people were frustrated with the creative that they had. But you know what? Let's get the great balls of fire. Let's have a couple of great matches there. It was cool seeing Braun Strowman come back. And then, you know, we'll firmly be on the path to SummerSlam and see exactly what they have entailed for that big show coming up right around the corner. So thanks again to everybody for listening. Please subscribe on iTunes. You can rate and review the podcast. If you rate us, give us 5 stars, help us move up the ranks, and give us some reviews as well. You can follow me on Twitter. I am at Brian Fritz. Any kind of feedback you want to give me will be tremendous. And I'm always there to have conversations with everybody. Oh, and by the way, if you can also get the podcast. We're on Stitcher. We're on the TuneIn app. We're on SoundCloud as well. And on Google Play. Which is very important for everybody that has Android. You might want to be going the route of Google Play so you can do that. And like I said, rate and review the podcast there as well. And if you could, please support us on Patreon. Go to patreon.com/between the ropes. Thanks again to everybody for listening, and I will talk to you next time right here, Between the Ropes.